Remaker's Mark, Episode 27, Good Morning, Vietnam. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in Episode 27, where we are discussing Good Morning, Vietnam. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite country in which to wake?
I am very well, thank you. And I will say my favorite country in which to wake so far is Japan.
Ooh, nice. Excellent. Was it like a robotic bed situation or just was very peaceful for you?
I was in Japan on a business trip many years ago. I got to stay in a very nice hotel on the 21st floor. And apparently there was one night an earthquake that I didn't wake through. And instead the hotel just kind of rocked gently back and forth. And I was just kind of cradled in my bed and, you know, slept peacefully. And then I had the most advanced toilet I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
But also I had an amazing view of downtown Tokyo out of my window. And I thought, this is just a view I'm never, ever going to see anywhere else in the world.
Cool. Those advanced toilets are awesome. We have one of those in our house now, randomly. And, well, not randomly. It's been here the whole time. Didn't just show up, but it's very strange.
Deuce, like, what the?
After I use it, I feel like I should like bow or just say thank you. I don't know like what the appropriate etiquette is.
But. I'd say, you know, offer it a gift, which you kind of just did.
But ching. All right. On that note, let's move along. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you today? And what is your favorite country in which to wake?
I am great, and my favorite country to wake, in which to wake, is God's country.
Ooh, nice. Is that Denver?
It's many places. I would say most specifically in my circumstances, it would probably be in the North Woods of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Which is, in fact, God's country.
But it could also be wherever the Edge and Bono are.
Yes. That's a good call. I don't mind waking up wherever they are.
Nice.
You're a Joshua tree.
Jared, can I dive even deeper into this? What lake?
I feel like we should, yes. What? Yes.
What lake?
Stewart.
Ooh.
Stewart Lake. In which four of the five of us have woken up there.
It was quite cold, but I remember it well. It was a chilly awakeness. Lee Hardy Soup, how are you doing tonight? And what is your favorite country in which to wake?
I'm great, and probably Belgium.
Ooh, nice.
During my most recent trip, it was the only hotel that had air conditioning. It was on the 8th floor, so I had a great view of downtown Antwerp, and they had the best breakfast.
Yeah, I was going to say, is waffle anticipation a factor in this decision?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
They were amazing.
Nice. Awesome. Good choice. And Mark Josing, how are you, and what is your favorite country in which to wake?
I'm well, thanks. And gotta say, in my experiences, it was Norway.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it was pretty much transcendent, and I one day look forward to going back.
Wonderful. Or wunderbar in this case.
No.
But not in this case.
No, not at all in that case.
Yeah? What's that, Finnish?
That's German. That's German. Oh, that's German.
Okay, Finnish. Good, got it. Excellent. I am Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine evening. And you know what? This is a strange answer. I'm going to say the United States only because I get to control what coffee I drink, because that is a huge determinant in how my wake up goes. So I love waking up in many countries, but by virtue of being able to make the coffee the way I want it and know that it's awesome, I'm going to give myself props there. It's awesome. That would be my answer. So if I could bring my coffee rig with me, which, you know, maybe sometime down the road I'll be able to do that, then you know, maybe it'll be a different answer. But for now, just me home. Just me lovely home.
Take that, rest of the world. Kyle's only coming to see if he can bring his coffee.
USA. USA.
Yep. I just keep breaking Chemexes in my suitcase. Yikes.
Does your coffee mug have a set of truck nuts on it?
It does not, no. Although I do have a mug that Mark made. It's a piece of pottery that when you finish the coffee inside of it, it's the caffeine chemical arrangement. Chemical, I don't know, what's the word for it? Symbol?
I don't know.
You made that one, didn't you, Mark? I think you gave me two of them.
Yeah, I remember it. It's the chemists of the world, please help me out, because it's not simply the chemical symbol. It's not the...
It's like a diagram.
Know, it's not just the letters and numbers.
It's the compound of caffeine.
The compound makeup.
Yeah. With the lines and the dots.
The thing that diagrams the bonds.
Yes. Yeah. So that's one of my favorites.
Freaking genius is what it is.
Mm-hmm. It is. Excellent. Well, before we go on to our discussion of Good Morning Vietnam, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. Join us for the very last live Buzzwords on Saturday, November 22nd at Club Underground. MJ Johnson and Courtney Algeo will discuss beards and parenting, all while trying to avoid the words they're not supposed to say and taking putative shots of whiskey along the way. All the proceeds from this show will go to Midwest Animal Rescue and Services. Interested in this and other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. Now, moving on to Andy, who is going to talk about a summary of the film and discuss our history with the movie. Andy?
Thank you, Kyle.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good Morning Vietnam was released in 1987. It is a comedy slash drama, or dramedy, directed by Barry Levinson, starring Robin Williams and Forrest Whitaker, among many others. Williams plays Adrian Cronauer, who is an actual person. Adrian Cronauer was an Air Force airman slash radio DJ with Armed Services Radio in Vietnam. The movie is chock full of wonderful supporting characters, and I think less comedy and much more depth than most of us expected, even though as we had probably, I think we had all seen this prior to this recording. I think we all revisited it within the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say?
Yep.
I hadn't actually seen the whole thing.
Oh, okay. So I think Lee and I had similar reactions to it. Lee, I'll let you go ahead. I don't want to steal your thunder here.
Oh, well, I just remember seeing all the TV ads playing up the comedy aspect of it. And when I finally saw it, it might have been on HBO or something like that. I was kind of shocked at how serious it got all of a sudden. It was, I guess, very John Hughes-esque in that way.
Yeah, I feel that I didn't see this probably till I was maybe in college. But I agree that all the previews and trailers and things like that were almost exclusively clips of Robin Williams with his radio rants and jokes and things like that. But it's actually a very small part of the movie, and the rest of it is much more serious than I was expecting. JR, what did you think about it?
I picked the movie because it was one of the movies of the 80s that really captured my attention and love of film, I suppose. But I think for the most part, it was one of those movies that's pretty infinitely quotable, but it's not a typical 80s comedy in its irreverence. It is, like you said, a pretty serious movie. And up until then, the only thing that I had really seen as far as comedy in a serious subject was probably MASH, which is, I think, a similar vibe. It kind of toes that line between serious and comedy pretty well.
Also a war movie.
Mm-hmm. And I thought this one did a good job of doing both of those very well also. So, I picked it. I don't remember any specific memories about seeing it for the first time or anything like that. I just remember my group of friends back in high school had all seen it and all loved watching it and quoting it. And so it was just kind of one of those movies that was in our pantheon at the time.
I think that one thing that struck me when I was revisiting this, so this movie came out in 1987, which was exactly 1 year after movies like Top Gun and Three Amigos, which we've covered on this podcast. And I think in my mind, being that close in time, like I would have lumped, and especially seeing the previews of this movie, would have lumped it kind of into the bigger pool of 80s comedies that were all kind of there's a goofiness to it. Now, this certainly, I don't think the comedy was necessarily viewed as slapstick or something like that, but I think it felt like more of a natural fit from that perspective. But then when you see the whole picture, it's completely different and in a completely different league than those movies that I mentioned earlier. So,
yep. I think we're going to touch on that a little bit in part two of kind of the tone and what that feels like and some surprise in that. So yeah, little prediction there.
It was the fourth highest grossing comedy of 1987.
Wow. See, I don't consider it a comedy. All right, we'll get there. We'll get there eventually. I have qualms with that, but
maybe it wasn't comedy. Maybe it's just fourth highest grossing movie of 1987.
Yeah,
I'll check.
Okay, excellent. We'll have a
there will be much umbrage, I think, to discuss with this later.
We'll have immediate follow up later. All right. So in part one, as usual here, we are going to first talk about recasting the movie. So we have two major characters and five minor characters that we are going to recast. The first major character is that of Eddie Garlick. Jared, tell us about Garlick, aside from the delicious spice.
Thank you. Private First Class Edward Montesquieu Eddie Garlick was a young radio assistant and Adrian Cronauer's first contact in Saigon. He's a wet behind the ears and, as of the movie, unaffected by the harshness of the war and his superiors. Garlick tries to keep Cronauer out of trouble, and ultimately they become friends. He's not an accomplished cyclist, and as of this recording, has never submitted a requisition for a new name.
Edward. I'd like an explanation.
But anything in particular?
A lot of people went to the mat for you. Thousands of guys wrote in, called in, trying to get you reinstated. And I literally think that you owe it to all of them to get your ass back on the air.
Kevin noticed the army doesn't really want me, Ed. Been harassing me since the day I got off the plane.
So what? It's the guys in the field that matter, remember? Those are the guys that are dying.
Edward, I tried to tell the truth, and they kicked me off the air. I screw up once more, Dickerson sends me to the field with a rifle, I come home in a box.
What you do is important to a lot of people.
Forget it, will you?
I love Forrest Whitaker. I think he's outstanding in just about everything he does.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very early Forrest Whitaker role, but he just has this sweet innocence to him and really kind of plays a nice yin to Cronauer's yang. Did we already use that joke before?
Yeah, a couple times.
Not this episode. Not this episode.
Okay, good. Then I intentionally made it a callback. I think the moments that I enjoy most about him, as and we've talked about this before, of kind of imagining who somebody would play by putting them into a certain specific point in the movie, and the few that come to mind that Forrest Whitaker just did so well is towards the end of the movie when Adrian Cronauer is kind of thinking that he's just going to give up and he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to keep going. They're stuck in a traffic jam with some new soldiers off the boat, and Forrest Whitaker kind of takes the opportunity to use that to show Adrian Cronauer what an impact he has to these soldiers and what an important piece of this war effort he is. And I love that moment. And then towards the beginning of the movie when they're driving in the truck and maybe it's towards the middle, but when they're driving in the truck out to go do an interview or something and talking about how Garlick wants to be in radio and he wants to be a DJ and play the smooth jazz and whatnot. And they just have these great little sweet moments. So all of that to say, the person that I picked for the role is Jonah Hill.
Nice.
Good pick.
Yeah, I like that. To me, the character is like a straight man, but he's a very interesting straight man. Sometimes the straight man is just a foil to allow the other person to bounce off of, and Robin Williams is very bouncy. So, I mean, he had the opportunity to just be the person that Williams could sort of joke off of or vibe off of, but he was a really interesting actor, and it made it a very interesting character. And I think, yeah, I think Jonah Hill would do that quite well.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I'll say a lot of times the straight man role is a very, very static character, but Garlick was not that. There was a lot of character development and a lot of dynamic to the writing, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could have just been a setup guy and slow pitched stuff to Robin Williams all movie, but I think that he was a much more interesting character, and I would have liked to have even seen more of him outside of his relationship with Cronauer and gotten a little bit more of who he was and what his motivations were in this situation too. Well, if nobody else has anything else to say, then I will pass the baton to Garble Mike Andy. Let me slow that down, pick it up, and normal voice Andy, go ahead.
Thank you. I think Jonah Hill is a good choice. I think my choice is equally good, maybe slightly more good. I chose Michael Cera, Jonah Hill's co-star in Superbad, to fulfill the role of Mr. Private Eddie Garlick. the description that you gave, Jer, is spot on. This character is, he lacks confidence, but he kind of has it deep down. He's not really worried about the authority figures. He just kind of, you know, deals with it. But he's not really intimidated by them. But, of course, no one's really intimidated by at least one of the authority figures. We'll get to that later. He's very interesting compared to Cronauer. It's like he looks up to him very much. I wondered, going into this movie, like, if Cronauer was a well-known radio personality within the armed services network. So, like, getting him to come to Saigon was like, ooh, we got Cronauer coming. I don't know. I just wondered that because I got the feeling from Garlic that he really looked up to him and kind of wanted to be like Cronauer. So I like the devotion that he kind of shows to him. He isn't afraid to stand up to him when the time comes. And also, yeah, I just think he's a great character. He really is devoted to the causes in which he believes. So anyway, all that to say, Michael Cera, I think, has that natural kind of passive nature, which I felt was a big part of the portrayal of Garlic on the surface. But I could see if you push him hard enough, he's going to push back. Or if it's something that he really believes in, he's going to stand up for it and he's going to fight for it. I will reference Scott Pilgrim versus the World as that. So, but plus, I think he could be really funny in some of the scenes where Garlic has some, when he contributes to the humor. He's never like the primary contributor of the, or primary driver of the humor, but he definitely assists it along, if that makes sense. So Michael Cera trumps Jonah Hill.
My only problem with Michael Cera is that, to me, and I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim, so I'm sorry.
I haven't either.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Lieutenant. You may step down. Oh gosh, guys.
That's not him at all. What?
that was from
I know
Andre Brower.
That's Andre Brower. We talked about this before.
Okay, I know. My only problem with Michael Cera is that, to me, he always plays Michael Cera, and I don't see Michael Cera in Vietnam.
He's gotten a little bit better. To me, it's a difference between being a softie, which I think Forrest Whitaker is. I think he's a softie and just a gentle soul versus passive. I think those are two very different things, and I think Michael Cera would lean more on the passive side. Like I would have a harder time seeing him kind of riling him up or getting him back. So, but I think he's doing better at being less Michael Cera-y, but I'm not quite confident that he's there quite yet.
This is where I think a Scott Pilgrim is relevant.
Thank you.
I mean, in the, as Andy said, the Scott Pilgrim character does get very, what's the word I'm looking for?
He gets a little steel in his spine.
Yeah.
There you go. And
he grows a pair.
Yeah. I mean, he was something else at the beginning, but the imagine his character in Superbad transforming into end of the movie Scott Pilgrim, and that's where I think this character could go, minus all the martial arts.
Although that would be kind of a cool addition to the film,
wouldn't it? Though
maybe out of place, but still. So there you go, Mark. Since you were just on the microphone, to you.
Well, I was, yes, looking for the same sorts of things out of this recasting. And where I went was Kenan Thompson.
Nice.
Thank you. And we would know Kenan Thompson from Saturday Night Live. Currently one of the longest tenured cast members. He's everywhere and nowhere. He's brilliant. He can do the very, very kind of subdued, sweet characters. And I think that's mostly what he's done when he's not on SNL. Such as his role in the J.J. Abrams TV drama Felicity. Yeah, and Fat Albert. Anyways.
Don't forget Good Burger.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you're not missing much. It was just a reference.
Fair enough. Anyway, we've seen all sorts of characters out of Kenan Thompson on SNL. He's a great character actor. He's fantastically funny. And I think that he can do just kind of the sweet, dopey thing really, really well. And that's what I want to see him do in this role.
Yeah. There was a recent article about Phil Hartman where he was described as the glue of SNL at that time. And I don't think Kenan is quite Phil Hartman level. I honestly don't think anybody in the history of SNL is Phil Hartman level. But but he gets relied upon in so many different ways in the sketches right now on SNL. Sometimes it's just totally as does. Like token black guy. You know what I mean? And I think it's unfortunate to simplify it that way, but I think sometimes the writing does. You know, he is called upon to like act black or act in a specific way. And I think his biggest strength and his biggest weakness for me is that we haven't seen him do a lot outside of that, kind of on the dramatic side. But I totally think he can do it. So, and I haven't seen Felicity. I haven't watched Felicity, so I should call upon that as a reference point. I know that was a while ago, but still, yeah.
That was a while ago. That was a kind of a late 90s, like, college drama. Yeah. So,
Yep. That's a J.J. Abrams, yeah? Did you say
it? Yeah, it is J.J. Abrams. Yep. I think right before he did Alias.
Yep. So, I think he can totally do it. I have faith in him, and I really like him. I think he's a good guy. So, yeah, good call.
Thank you. Well, let's move on to Lee.
Thank you. I think the thing that stood out to me about the character of Eddie Garlick is how soft-spoken and mild-mannered he is. So that's kind of what I was looking for. I mean, that's what Forrest Whitaker brought to the role, and I thought that was a good choice, and I wanted to continue that in a remake. So I picked Daniel Radcliffe.
nice.
Interesting.
Considering that he's, you know, throughout the Harry Potter series, he's very soft-spoken. I know that even though he was one of the main characters, I know he's trying to break out of that mold a bit. And I think a role like this would do that for him. It would be interesting to hear him play an American, but I don't even think that would be necessary in something like this, since, you know, the British would have been our allies. So, yeah, I think that he'd be a good pick for this role.
I think he can probably do a pretty good American accent, would be my guess.
Yeah,
ours is pretty easy.
Yeah, he did it when he hosted SNL.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Good point.
It was very, very good. It was better than Emma Watson's.
Yeah.
I'm just not a big Daniel Radcliffe fan.
Yeah?
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just...
I think he's got a lot of ability that he has yet to show. And that's what I want to see.
I always got this. He honestly, if for the Harry Potter movies I've watched, which are not all of them, I will freely admit, but he's usually my least favorite part of those movies.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And
I think it's also fair.
I feel like he was cast as Harry Potter because he looked like the kid who was on the cover of the books, you know,
probably,
and then just kind of got stuck with it.
Yeah, he doesn't get enough credit for that, I don't think.
I mean, I don't want to disparage him because he's not like a crappy actor. It's not like me up there, but I always felt like he was, I don't know, hard to describe. It's like vocal cadence or something like that. There was something that always felt a little forced about it.
Yeah, I totally see your point, but I think he can do a lot more.
And he's, I hate also wizards,
really young, you know, so there is that. He's what, 20, 24, 25, something like that. So
yeah, he's a young guy.
He's got a long ways to go ahead of him. So I totally, totally see that. And I think Harry is by far the hardest role because he has to, like, you kind of know where the journey is going to go for him, but you don't know exactly. And so, you know, there's just a lot of expectations to live up to in a million different ways. And I think having to balance that would be really hard as an actor, trying to maintain your own sense of self in a role like that while still honoring the character that everyone knows, you know, so really trying to find that, I think, could be really tough.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Horns as his next step.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
I really want him to do well. Yeah. I wish him well. I do. I really do.
You do not wish him any specific harm.
I wish you well, and that I wish you no specific harm.
Thanks, Mo.
And I think maybe Harry Potter was a bad barometer for this, just because I haven't seen all of them either, and I could not get through the third one. I was so bored.
Oh, my God. But
the third one? Are you kidding me?
That one's amazing.
That was one of the best ones.
Yeah.
They were all like just hitting puberty, and I couldn't stand listening to them.
Oh, well, yeah.
We'll have to do some marathons. We watch those so often here. So, Lee, you'll have to come over, and we'll carry on. They're so good.
I certainly didn't mind him in The Woman in Black.
Mm-hmm.
Never saw that.
I mean, it was all right. It was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't anything special, but he wasn't terrible either. I mean, he was good.
Yeah. I appreciate that he's kept himself very busy since the Harry Potter franchise. Like, I heard him interviewed on an NPR program, and he was talking very much about, obviously, you know, wanting to diversify his career outside of Harry Potter, and I applaud him for that. You know, I feel like that's a Sisyphean task. Is that the right one?
Yep.
Sisyphusal.
Wow.
Yeah, reached way back in that one.
That's the one that Camus used, at least.
Anyway, but to try to get over that character, I mean, paging Mark Hamill. So, I mean, I don't...
So you're saying it needs to go into voice work, basically.
I'm saying they need to remake or add a Harry Potter sequel in 30 years, and it'll all be good.
There you go.
And he should play Anakin Skywalker.
Interesting.
Okay. Well,
this got derailed. Sorry about that.
That's all right. So I, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of the what we wanted out of the character. I wanted somebody that was just a little bit less of a softie, but somebody that could trade barbs more readily with him, because I so much of that was informed by the fact that, and we'll talk about this very soon, is that we're not trying to replace Robin Williams. We're trying to replace the role. And I don't know that anybody could trade barbs with Robin Williams, or very few people could, but I would love for this character to trade barbs with the Cronauer character in the remake a little bit, whether that be on air or off air. So I wanted somebody that was just had a little bit more presence that way. And I went with Anthony Mackie. He was most recently in, not most recently, but his probably most well-known role is in Captain America, The Winter Soldier. He plays Falcon, Sam Wilson. And if you know anything about the story, you'll see more of him. I'll just say that. So he's got a good presence. I think he can be funny. I think he can be interesting, and I think he can be very quippy, and not in the annoying quippy way, but in a way where, you know, someone can say something to him and he can come back and just give like a little bit of sass, but not too much sass. He hits the right sass level is what I'm trying to say. He's optimized sass. So that's what I wanted out of this, was a good optimization of sass. I've said sass more times in this than I have ever in my life. So there. So Anthony Mackie. Like,
good pick.
Well, thank you.
I don't know him, but I trust your judgment.
Thank you. He's been in quite a bit. He's in Gangster Squad, if anybody's seen that. He was in The Hurt Locker as well. He's a really good actor. He's very good. So definitely check it out. If you haven't seen Winter Soldier, you should see Winter Soldier, because it's awesome.
It's an excellent film.
Yeah, it really is.
I need to see Winter Soldier.
Yeah, you do.
I do too.
Yes. All right. There's maybe a movie night coming up.
Yes.
All right. So for the role of Eddie Garlick, originally played by Forrest Whitaker, Jer went with Jonah Hill, Andy went with Michael Cera, Mark went with Kenan Thompson, Lee went with Daniel Radcliffe, and I went with Anthony Mackie. Now, the second of our major roles is that of Adrian Cronauer. And Andy, tell us about Adrian.
Airman Second Class Adrian Cronauer, originally played by the incomparable and irreplaceable Robin Williams. The character Cronauer is a loose cannon, an improv comedy spitting ham, and the first armed services radio DJ to ever get fan mail. He befriends a local Vietnamese boy in the hopes of getting close to his beautiful sister, and instead has his eyes open to the realities of life in a Vietnam conflict / police action.
Freddy and the Dreamers!
Wrong speed. We've got it on the wrong speed. For those of you who are recovering from a hangover, that's going to sound just right.
Let's pull it right back down again. Let's try a little faster, see if that picks it up a little bit. Let's get up on 70. Those pilots are going right now. I really like the music. Oh, still a bad song.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's try something.
Let's play this backwards and see if it gets any better. Woof this, nyeh viv, Freddy is a devil. Woof this, nyeh viv, Freddy is a devil.
Picture a man going on a journey beyond sight and sound. He's left Crete. He's entered the demilitarized zone.
We kind of hit upon a little bit earlier the importance or weight that was put on Robin Williams' performance in this movie, especially, I think, in the scenes where he is on the microphone in the radio station doing what I assume was mostly improv and doing a masterful job at it. But really, that is a very small part of this film. And this character goes through a surprising, I think, emotional journey in the picture. And Kyle touched on it earlier. We're not trying to replace Robin Williams. We're trying to recast the character. There's a big, big difference. In my remake of this movie, this character's role would be diminished a little bit. There'd be less importance placed on the person of Cronauer. They would be a very important part of the story, but they wouldn't I don't know if I want to say they wouldn't be the keystone anymore, but they maybe would be one of a few keystones rather than the keystone. But I still wanted someone who could do those radio scenes. That's a very important part of the story. Someone who could be funny, someone who could you know, interact in front of the class where he's teaching English, which is, I thought, a brilliant, you know, a few scenes in the movie, and interact with other characters. So I wanted someone who could do that, and plus would have an interesting chemistry with my choice for Garlic, which is Michael Cera. So I chose Jason Bateman.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Thank you. Thank you. Those are, I'll take those as compliments.
I agree. It's also interesting.
We probably know Jason Bateman best from his role as Michael Bluth on Arrested Development. I think some of his funniest stuff was actually in Dodgeball, and some of that. I thought his role in Dodgeball was really funny, and I think that actually came out before Arrested Development started.
Yep.
Yes, it did.
That was my first introduction to be like, oh yeah, I remember him. That's Jason Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
The guy from Teen Wolf 2.
Wasn't he in something in the 80s? Yeah. But I like Jason Bateman's sense of humor. He has kind of a dry sense of humor, which I think would play well into a little bit of that improv. He's not nearly as manic as Robin Williams' portrayal was, which I think is okay. I think it could be brought down a notch. I want it to still be very funny and fast. And I think improv is great for this, if it could be done right. But I wanted someone who, I don't know, I felt like the other scenes in the movie with Robin Williams were a little harder to swallow. I don't know, there was just something about him that just didn't seem to mesh with everything else. It seemed like the rest of the cast was a perfect ensemble, and then Robin Williams was thrown on top for his rants in the radio booth.
Yeah,
and I don't feel like he gelled well with the rest of the cast, and I would want someone who could maybe mix that up a little bit better. So I chose Jason Bateman for that.
Yeah, I like him in the drama. I think he would really be missed in the booth. That is so hard to balance.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one, and maybe we could recast that or rewrite that in a way where maybe he's, you know, he has a partner in the booth and they're going back and forth or something like that. I don't know. It would have to be. You know, it would maybe be interesting to see Jason Bateman and Michael Cera going back and forth, as you know, in the booth, having one of them be a straight man.
Yeah.
So I don't know, just tossing it out there.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman for your consideration. Lee, I throw the ball to you.
Thank you very much. For a lot of the reasons that Andy mentioned, you know, just someone that can't really replace Robin Williams, but can have that balance between. You know, very funny and very serious. I think that my version of Adrian Cronauer would be maybe a little bit more sarcastic and a little less, I guess, silly. So I went with Ben Stiller.
Nice.
Because I think he can balance those two things really, really well. And at the same time, you know, bring maybe a little bit more sarcasm and bite to the performance.
Nice.
Just because of Ben Stiller and the setting, all I can think of is Tropic Thunder.
But that's true.
It still makes me laugh.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a bad thing. It's just a precedent for sure. Whether that's the precedent he wants or not, I don't know. But, yeah, yeah.
I was kind of thinking along the lines of a mixture of his character from Your Friends and Neighbors and There's Something About Mary.
Interesting.
So just a mesh of those two characters.
Interesting.
I think Ben Stiller would do a better job with the manic side of it if you wanted to go that direction. I feel like he's done that before, and it might not be mania leading to humor so much as just mania for, like, picture his character in Royal Tenenbaums, for example. Like, high-strung, maybe a better term.
A little unhinged.
A little unhinged. But I think if you could sprinkle in a little bit of his comedic elements in that, I think that could work.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking of his character from Dodgeball.
Wow.
And, you know, not so evil, but that's that sort of mania, I think, could be very appropriate.
You want to stick with the feathered hair, though, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. And, you know, the handlebar mustache.
Nice. It would work. It would totally work.
Yeah.
My only issue with Ben Stiller, and to a lesser degree, Jason Bateman, is age.
Yeah, I thought about that, too. For Jason Bateman, especially since they played father and son in Arrested Development, that would be a little odd. But there was a part in the movie that struck me as a little bit interesting, that Robin Williams' character, Adrian Cronauer and Garlic, even though one was Air Force and one was Army, were the same rank, were the equivalent of the same rank. They mentioned that. And it's pretty clear in that movie that Robin Williams is older than Forrest Whitaker by a fair degree. You know, they give him the flat top and they, you know, they try to make him look younger.
But he, even so, he's not 50s, which is where Ben Stiller is.
True.
And I would imagine that by then you're probably not on active duty anymore, even if you're a disc jockey.
Yeah, I think Stiller can look quite a bit younger, though.
Yeah, I think he looks younger.
I think he looks young enough for active duty.
Yeah.
Blue steel.
He'll always have blue steel. It's true.
But anyway, moving on to Kyle.
Yeah, so I wanted somebody that could do the freneticism that Robin Williams brought as well as anybody can now without trying to ape that performance. And that's really, really hard to do. The person that I settled on is one half of probably who I think is probably the best comedic duo right now. And that's Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele.
Nice.
Everything I see of their show blows me away. I mean,
it's awesome.
Oh my God. We just watched my cousin, Stephen Ellen, came over on Friday. Kate was out of town. And we watched a skit of theirs, which was, Keegan-Michael Key played a Hollywood executive, and he was talking with Carl Winslow from Family Matters. Have you seen the sketch?
Yes.
So Carl Winslow is upset because the show is supposed to be about Family Matters, right? About this family, and then it became the Urkel show, right? So he's like very upset, and they're like, it's an intense dramatic scene, but you know that it's comedic at heart. But if you didn't know that, you would be like, oh my God, what is going to happen? And it just goes totally dark and totally disgusting. But anyways, you should see it. You should watch it. But I just think he is so versatile, and he can do 1,000 different things, and he can do all of them really well. I've yet to see anything that he can't do well. I think maybe some of the seriousness might be a little bit harder, but I think he can do it. I think that he just doesn't do it in a show because they don't want it to get too dark. They don't want Key and Peele to get like too over the top dark. But I think he is a tremendous talent and really fast and really sharp and funny. And I think he could balance out those booth scenes with the dramatic scenes. I also think it would be really interesting to see an African-American in that role, you know, to see some mm-hmm. of the challenge there and see kind of a, you know, when he's getting flack, you know, you feel like he's getting flack from his superior because his superior hates him. So that could add a different, less superficial level, not just hating him because he doesn't like what he stands for, but, you know, they could add a racial level. That could be interesting, a different kind of conflict. So, yeah. So Keegan-Michael Key.
It would be interesting to have Peele as Garlic in that situation.
You know, I thought about it, but I thought it would deter and it would become that would become the story, and I didn't want that to do that.
Yeah.
So I really considered that, and I really vacillated back and forth. But
Is it mostly because Peele has already done a Forrest Whitaker impression?
No, I could see that. But no, it was mostly just like I didn't want it to be like Key and Peele's Good Morning Vietnam, you know? I don't think it would necessarily turn into that, but I think people would then expect that, and I didn't want that.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. But I just think they're unbelievably funny.
Yes, they are.
I actually thought about him briefly, too.
Nice. Right on.
Yep.
Mark, it is to you now. Who did you pick?
I did not pick Keegan-Michael Key.
That's okay.
Instead, I picked Chris Pratt.
Nice.
And yes, and the reasons were exactly the same as yours, Kyle. I was looking for somebody that could keep up that same sort of the same level of energy and tempo, but not feel like, well, like a Robin Williams impression. You know, like I would love to see somebody doing all the impressions and, you know, the different voices and whatnot and what have you, but it would just feel like somebody's trying to imitate Robin Williams' performance. And so bringing a different sort of thing to this role, but still keep up that high energy is what I was looking for. And I think Chris Pratt is my guy for that. He's very, very funny. And I think he's more versatile than he's probably given credit.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Through having watched... Having watched him through Parks and Rec and The 5-Year Engagement and most recently Guardians of the Galaxy, I think he does a lot of things and he does them well.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him being a little bit more of the rock and roll DJ as opposed to the funny comedian, but still having that same sort of crazy energy morning zoo crew kind of thing, and I think it would play differently, but I think you would have a very similar result of just being very fun and very both fun to watch and very believable as somebody that the soldiers would latch on to as a local hero that they would write fan mail to.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree. I can see him both being that irreverent and that charismatic.
Yeah. You know, I think we're going to talk a little bit about this in part two as far as setting and time and stuff, but I think if this were Good Morning, you know, Iraq, Good Morning, I mean, something, you know, like a something that would happen today, that would be locked in for me. I think that would be a great pick. I don't think that he couldn't do Good Morning Vietnam, but I think he would be perfect in a modern setting for that.
Thank you.
He also, unlike some of the other picks, feels like he could, and he has in Zero Dark Thirty, I suppose, play a soldier. Like, you have a little bit of a believability there, even though he's not, you know, a frontline grunt type soldier, but he has a little bit more of that military presence to him.
Yeah, while still being an everyman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Agreed. You can definitely see the basing trading in him.
Yep.
And I'm picturing some of the other scenes where the English language class and sort of becoming friends with these local families and people and personalities. I think that would be equally, or if not more, touching than it was in the original, which those are some of my favorite scenes of the original movie, where he's in the class and they're playing softball with the gourd or whatever it was, and
melons,
breadfruit or whatever. But I think that would play up even more. And I think that sort of coming to terms with the reality of who these people are and where they are and what this conflict really means, I think would be that much more indelible into the audience with him.
Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed.
Great pick, Mark.
Thank you, Jer. Mm. Speaking of Jer, would you wrap us up in this one?
Absolutely. I picked Chris Pratt.
Nice.
Excellent pick.
Thank you.
For the aforementioned reasons and more, I'm sure.
Many more, yeah, that I won't go into right now.
Nice. Good pick. Good co-pick. We don't set it up that way. That wasn't done on purpose. We just put the order randomly, and then it just happened that way. So, yeah. Good work, fate. Yay. All right. So, for Adrian Cronauer, originally played by Robin Williams, Andy chose Jason Bateman. Lee went with Ben Stiller. I went with Keegan-Michael Key. Mark went with Chris Pratt. And Jer also went with Chris Pratt. Now we're moving on to the minor characters. The first one is Tuan. Mark, tell us about Tuan.
Tuan is Cronauer's young Vietnamese friend and helps Cronauer in courting his sister Trinh. He is resourceful and confident and also a Viet Cong terrorist. How his political affiliation and his friendship with Cronauer are not mutually exclusive, I'm not really sure. For my pick for Tuan, I was suffering from, I don't know, I think a bit of a shallow experience pool in young Asian actors. I blame my having not seen any of the Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hate those movies.
Hey, they're fast.
The very idea of them.
And furious.
I hate them, too.
Mm-hmm. I would, the only reason I would go to one of those would be to poop on it.
Mm. Did you cast Vin Diesel?
It's total natural. Guess? The ghost of Paul Walker.
Anyway, no, I actually did stick with young Asian actor because, yeah, I'm recasting this in, you know, Vietnam conflict / police action. And turns out I could come up with one that I think fits the role, even though he's Chinese. And he is Jimmy Wong. Most of my experience with Jimmy Wong has been from the Rocket Jump series Video Game High School. To everybody in the world, if you have not seen it, please do.
Yeah, I still need to check that out.
It's on Netflix streaming, and you can also watch it on the Rocket Jump YouTube channel. But it's a great series, and Jimmy Wong is hilarious. The series is versatile enough to give him some good drama alongside the silly comedy, and lots of shades in between. Well, I take it from the responses, none of you guys have seen the series, so...
I'm afraid not, no.
Yeah, so
studying,
you're going to have to take my
studying,
word.
Studying.
Yeah. So trust me on this one. Jimmy Wong for president.
All right.
Thumbs up.
He was great as the process server in Days of Our Lives, episode 1.11439.
Was he ever?
I really appreciated him as Sync employee in Sync.
Mm-hmm. The one kind of bigger role that it seems like he might have had would be in John Dies at the End. And I know I've
been meaning to see that.
Yeah, ditto. It's on streaming now.
It is on streaming.
Yes.
Yep.
As is Video Game High School. Anyway, you guys will all get experience with Jimmy Wong because you will all watch Video Game High School.
Deal.
And the Good Morning Vietnam remake.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Good Tuan.
Good Tuan. Lee, please tell us about Trin.
Well, Trin is Phan Duc Tho, or Tuan's sister, and the center of Kronauer's affection. His interest in her leads to a friendship with her brother and eventually to a very complicated situation. She also serves as a means for Kronauer to become more familiar and sympathetic with the local Vietnamese community. I'm kind of in the same boat as Mark, as not really knowing a whole lot of Asian actors and actresses, but I went with someone who has been mentioned here before, and even though she's from South Korea, I did see a movie that Jer had recommended, and I picked Yong Hee Seo. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think so.
But she was in The Chaser, which is the movie that Jer mentioned before. It's a really good movie. She's an excellent actress, and that movie was dark as hell.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's.
I'm so bummed it's not on streaming anymore.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, yeah,
yep.
But
it's good and dark as hell.
Yeah, kind of makes Seven look like light and cheery,
like less than Seven.
Yeah,
makes Seven totally look like Six.
But I thought she's extremely talented. She's very beautiful, and I think she would be perfect for this one.
All right.
Cool. Good pick. Yeah, those are hard. I'm proud that we talked about whether to do that and just knowing the difficulty of that. So good for us for picking those roles, even though we don't know a lot about those. But hopefully it branches our horizons out a little bit, expands our horizons, and maybe others as well. So good on you.
Well, and I think with the Asian actors and actresses that we picked, you know, it could still leave it wide open that it wouldn't have to be in Vietnam. It could be during the Korean conflict, or it could be, you know, in the Pacific during World War II or something like that. So,
yeah. Yep.
But on to Andy.
Yes, on to me. Marty Lee Drywitz is another radio DJ at Armed Services Radio. He's an over-caffeinated Kronauer superfan. He is the manic yin to Dan the Man Levitan's mellow yang. Just in case Jared didn't bring a yin to the yang analogy into our episode, I wanted to make sure we got a second one in there.
Good work.
Callback.
Callback to the callback. Marty Lee Drywitz was originally played by Robert Wu, who you've probably seen in Arliss and Batman and other things.
He's a that guy.
He's a that guy. Oh, that guy.
Yep.
Anyhow, for this one, I chose Rainn Wilson. I thought he would be very funny. This is a very minor character. A perfect place, I think, for a very established comedic actor to just kind of go in there, shine, do a lot of stuff without any of the pressure of being a star, have a lot of fun with it, and then pss, you're gone. So I think Rainn Wilson would be very, very funny as this overeager, fast-talking, smooth-voiced DJ who just also thinks that Kronauer is the funniest thing to walk through the doors of Radio Saigon. So there you are. Rain to the Wilson.
That's a great pick.
Thank you.
I would see flashes of his character from Sahara.
Oh, yeah. Good call. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Nice. Brought Sahara back.
Call to the call to the callback. Sahara.
Boom.
Good one.
And I think he was in Band of Brothers. No, he wasn't.
He'll be in the Band of Brothers 2.
Band of Sisters. I am really looking forward to this pick, the one that Kyle is going to say now, because I'm not going to steal his thunder.
Thank you. So my character is Second Lieutenant Stephen Hauk. Stephen Hauk is old school in all the wrong ways. Old school in wishing to be called by his title of lieutenant, old school in his military beliefs and practices, and most/worst of all, old school in his comedy stylings. This was originally played brilliantly and sort of unexpectedly by Bruno Kirby. We really liked him in When Harry Met Sally, and seeing the role in that movie compared to this could not be more different. I mean, I was almost unrecognized recognizable. He's just kind of a schmuck, and he played the schmuck very, very well. And so it was, I wanted somebody that could try to equal his schmuckness, I guess. And one of the larger schmucks that I've seen on screen in the last couple of years is in the show Orange is the New Black. The character's name is George Mendez, a.k.a. Pornstash. And the actor's name is Pablo Schreiber, I'm not sure which. But he is, you hate him, but you kind of cheer for him at the same time a little bit in Orange is the New Black. Like, you don't want to like
cheer for him.
Yeah, you don't want to like him, but at the same time you do just a little bit. But he is a total schmuck, and I thought he could do this role perfectly. I wouldn't want him to be quite so hard ass as he is in Orange is the New Black. I'd want him to be a little bit more, I don't know, Bruno Kirby, like, just felt like he had a lot to prove all the time, and I'd want to have that stick with this. So I wouldn't want him to be quite so intense as he is in Orange is the New Black, but I wanted you to just dislike this guy for the same reasons that you disliked him, and you kind of wanted him to fail a little bit, but yet you wanted to hear what he was going to do when he ended up on the radio, right? You kind of wanted him to fail, but you were like, I'm gonna see what happens here. And I think he would do a very good balance of that. So yeah, Pablo Schreiber, I'm not sure which.
Bruno Kirby was my favorite part of this movie.
Yeah,
mine too.
Oh, by far. I loved every bit of it.
The whole scene where he is going on to replace him, mm-hmm. and Robert Hull is like, I've heard the tape, you're not funny. And everybody's just like, you need to stop this now. And then he goes on and he does his thing with Frenchie and whatever else. And then at the end, there's the awkward pause, and he takes the headphones off slowly and just says, I think you all owe me an apology.
I think some apologies are in order.
Oh my God, it's perfect. Yeah.
Soon the news. Then Lieutenant Steve. Who's that? It's me, old pal Frenchie.
Listen, Frenchie, let me ask you something. Do you like good food? Oh, but of course, the French love good food. Well, then I guess that would make you an Edie Gourmet. Oh, Lieutenant Steve. Oh, Frenchie. Oh, Lieutenant Steve. Frenchie, you know, I really shouldn't kid Frenchie, because sometimes he stand gets mad at me and he could out hurt. Lieutenant Steve, let's play some music. Okay, Frenchie, what would you like to hear? Well, I love a good polka as much as the next man. Well, a good polka it is for my good friend, Frenchie. I think some apologies are in order.
He is so confident in himself.
Yeah.
So inappropriately confident in himself.
There is nothing that would have dissuaded him from his belief that he is funny.
Yeah. Yep. Misguided in every way. Yeah. Oh.
In every single way.
Yep.
I would appreciate if you guys would salute me once in a while.
And if you do. And if you do.
I love the later on when the general kicks him off the air. He's like, deep in my heart, I know that I'm funny.
That's his crusade.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
It has nothing to do with anything else. Yeah.
So good. All right, Jer, round us off here. What is the last minor character, and who did you pick?
Sergeant Major Philip Dickerson, originally played by J.T. Walsh, is the last minor character. He is your classic cinematic military officer. He is a no-nonsense, expecting everyone to obey orders without question, and is not a fan of shenanigans. If cinema is art and J.T. Walsh paints with military officers as his paintbrush, he...
Intriguing.
He has... you look at J.T. Walsh in basically any role, and he's playing shades of this same character.
Yep.
And to the degree in A Few Good Men, he plays Lieutenant Colonel Markinson instead of Dickerson.
It's totally different.
I totally was confusing the two of them as I was thinking about it, but I digress. So I was just looking for somebody who knows how to play no-nonsense military officers, and so I went with the he's so hot right now, Idris Elba.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Good call.
Nice.
He is so hot right now.
He is. Yep.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have time for this role because I looked at his IMDb page and he's got like 8 movies coming out in the next 2 years. But yeah, he could come in, do his scenes in a couple of days. He'll be fine barking orders and putting down people and whatnot. And eventually getting transferred to Guam.
Yeah. He had it coming. That was that was a good comeuppance.
He did have it coming.
Yep. Nice. That's a good picture. I like it. All right. So that wraps up the minor characters. And with that, this first half of our discussion of Good Morning Vietnam. If you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes where we provide links to the IMDb pages for all the actors, actresses, and movies discussed here. You can find us on both Twitter and Facebook at mathishardnet. Our next episode will be released on Monday, December 1st, where we will be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes and appreciation we have for Good Morning Vietnam. I just want to take a moment to say that this, I don't know to the day exactly, but this is the 2-year anniversary of this show and of Math is Hard as a whole. This was the thing that started Math is Hard, which is awesome. So I just want to say thank you to you guys for being here with me for 2 years. And here's to many, many more. And I'm really excited about where we're at and where we're going and some things that we've got going on this show and with the network. So thank you, gentlemen. It's been a real honor and a real pleasure to be hanging with you for this long. We've been friends forever. Yay. And it's just part of that. And I love it.
I thought this was only a 2-year contract.
Guess you're a free agent, Andy.
Yes.
For a podcaster to be named later.
Nice. I'm listening This American Life.
Oh, Ira. Well, gentlemen, until the next time, may the force be with you.
And also with you.